Telehouse Committee on Health Care to order. And let me make a couple of announcements. First of all, we are not going to open House Bill 2324, which effectively will end our consideration of that bill in this session. It is our intention to, and we are keeping a list, to do a concentrated effort on finding out how we can help on, from the healthcare side on dealing with drunk driving and then reducing drunk driving and its problems. And that's going to be an interim activity that we're going to take fairly seriously. So we would expect to find some way to deal with this question of the role of health insurance on dealing with alcohol treatment services needed as a part of court actions on diversion programs, but we don't feel like this one is quite ready to deal with at this moment. So we will not be opening that, and that means it goes away. I'm also going to carry over until Wednesday, the work session on House Bill 3137. On that, we are in communication with the Senate. There is a possibility, or maybe even a likelihood, that Senate Bill 99 will pass out of the committee to the floor on Wednesday and then to the floor on Thursday and come over here if they can work it that way, and then we'll have a chance to work on it. That's our hope now, and so we're going to keep 3137 alive in case we need it alive, but our hope is we'll be working Senate Bill 99 instead of it. So carry that over. We'll carry it over each day just to keep it alive as we go along. Let's see. Where else are we going? We have a couple of public hearings. Okay, we're going to carry over House Bill 2144 until the 18th of April. That will be rescheduled on the 18th. And we are going to carry over 2401 until the 18th, again, rescheduled on the 18th. We're hoping to get rid of a fiscal that we intend to get rid of on that one, and if we can, we will move it. If we can't, we'll decide about it. We're gonna get to House Bill 2380 in a bit. It turns out we don't have the material to move that, but we will take the opportunity to pass an amendment to it that takes some pieces out, basically the piece that would require non-certified direct entry midwives to become certified or licensed or whatever it is, but we'll leave the remainder of the bill. There's apparently still some work on that bill that may need to happen in the Senate, but we'll send it over with our best wishes and see if it can happen over there. So our intention is to open that work session in a bit, adopt that in order, adopt that amendment, and then carry it over until Wednesday. I want to open up a public hearing on House Bill 2389. I'm opening the public hearing simply to get through the public hearing notification stuff. And when I close the public hearing, which I've just done, we will now carry over House Bill 2389 to Wednesday. Okay? Oh, no, I'm sorry, to 418. We're carrying. I have my scribbled notes that I can't make any sense out of. So, if my able administrator here will keep me on online, we're going to open up a work session on 2371. And, Madam Administrator, if you tell us what that bill is and where we are with it.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2371 requires organizations that purchase and administer vaccines to certify that the employees have completed an Oregon Health Authority approved no-cost online training session on the storage, handling, and administration of vaccines, declares an emergency effective on passage. You'll remember there were some concerns about some of the boards, primarily the Board of Pharmacy that already has a program up and running, the Dash 3 amendments that the committee should have either electronically, and if you don't have it, hard copy, I can provide that to you, exempts out any entity that already has a training requirement, and if they can demonstrate to the authority that the entity or the health licensing board has adequate training requirements, they will be exempted. Mr. Chair, in its original form, the bill had a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, but we have a no-impact statement on the Dash 3s and a no-revenue impact statement on the Dash 3s if that is the direction the committee chooses to go.
And then we, it'll be ready to move then?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and then the committee has the permission to rescind the Ways and Means referral.
Okay, will you script us through what we need to do, please?
I will. That is it.
We have a Dash 3, so you sound good. Okay, thank you. Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2371, dated 4-6-11.
Representative Thompson moves the Dash 3 amendments to House Bill 2371. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? We have Dash 3.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2371 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation that the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded and the bill be rescinded. Okay. Doing too much here.
Representative Thompson moves House Bill 2371 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the subsequent referral the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded. Is there any discussion? Pharmacy Board's okay with this now? We got things worked out?
They are.
Okay. Please call the roll.
Representative Horry?
Yes.
Representative Parrish?
Yes.
Representative Boyle?
Aye.
Representative Whitener?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Cannon?
Aye.
Co-Chair Kanemer?
Aye.
Co-Chair Thompson?
Aye.
Co-Chair Greenland?
Aye. Bill passes.
Do it.
Sure.
Representative Thompson will carry it. Let's check in also. Was that Representative? Whose bill was that? Was that Representative Nathan?
I think it is. Maybe she.
Why don't we check in with Representative Nathan?
Right here.
Representative Nathan is right there.
Where is she?
She's wearing a smile.
Representative Nathan will carry it.
Good.
Close the work session on House Bill 2371. Okay. Let's open a public hearing on House Bill 2392. And we have Representative Kotek and Dr. Cohen to talk to us about this.
Good afternoon, colleagues. For the record, Tina Kotek, State Representative, House District 44, North and Northeast Portland. Nice to be back. Always good to see the Healthcare Committee. Today, we're talking about House Bill 2392. Thank you for the opportunity to have a public hearing on this bill. I look forward to the conversation. You know, sometimes you introduce bills for the sake of starting a dialogue, and this one so far is taking the gold star of the session for me, so it generated a lot of conversation among folks. This bill, and you also have the Dash 1 amendments in front of you, which I'll be referring to. I know this is only a public hearing, but these were the direction that we were hoping to go with the bill, so you can have those for future reference, because I do hope what you hear today will encourage you to continue this conversation into the interim. This bill basically says that it's very simple. Community benefit dollars that our hospitals currently provide in the community, suggesting that 10% of those dollars be put towards the public health infrastructure. It's very straightforward. Hospitals have an interest in public health. I mean, just take a very simple example. If there's a disease outbreak and you have a lot of people coming into the hospital, that affects their bottom line. And so there is an integral relationship, I think, with a strongly functioning public health infrastructure and the ability of our hospitals and hospital systems to be able to meet the community health needs. As you know, under Medicaid rules, nonprofit hospitals are required to spend a certain amount of their revenue towards charity care and other community benefits. In Oregon, in 2007, my first session, we passed House Bill 3290, which required hospitals to do community benefit reporting, letting the legislature know and what is now the Oregon Health Authority know the dollars they're spending out in the community. And among the criteria for community benefit dollars, the statute and also the administrative rule says community benefits are programs or activities that provide treatment or promote health and healing as a response to identified community needs. They are not provided primarily for marketing purposes or to increase market share. And one of the things that community benefits could be used for is to enhance population health. So even in the statute and the OARs, you see this connection to public health. Other things that you will see when we have our first release of the community benefit reporting document, you'll see things, money being spent for community health improvement services, financial and in-kind contributions to the community, and community building activities, all things that could fall under that public health infrastructure domain. In the next couple of weeks, we're going to see two reports talking about that community benefit reporting, one that talks about trends in Oregon healthcare market, which you'll see some summary data for our DRGs and type A and B hospitals, and then Oregon's acute care hospital report, you'll see individual hospitals reporting on their community benefit dollars. When those reports get released, you'll have a better sense of the dollars that are going out in the community. So House Bill 2392 is an effort to engage in this conversation. You're going to hear from folks today. There are some good things going on right now between hospitals and public health departments in certain parts of the state, and I think we should encourage that because I do think there's a real, like I said at the outset, there is a goal for those two systems to work together closely. And the threshold in this bill of 10%, I'll be honest, it's a completely arbitrary number. My goal was not to say they should be spending more in community benefit dollars, but spending them more strategically and intentionally to work and be more integrated with public health. So as you go, hopefully, into the interim and look at this bill and look about how we can be more strategic and how community benefit dollars are appropriated by our local hospitals, to work with our local public health agencies to really have a win-win effect. And that's all this bill is about. It wasn't meant to, you know, say that dollars aren't being spent or not being spent wisely, but I think in the limited resources we have across the entire state, how can we best intentionally and strategically make sure our community benefit dollars are really promoting the overall community health and the population health? And with that, I'll take questions or look forward to the rest of the testimony. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chair. Representative, what does public health infrastructure entail?
Mr. Chair and Representative Kennemer, I think that's a great question. As you see in the Dash 1 amendments, we were going to say that could be prescribed and ruled by the Oregon Health Authority. Certainly needs more fleshing out. It could be a range of things. It could be making sure that interventions that keep people out of the emergency department, whether that's an asthma healthy home model that we've heard about, or maybe it's something as basic as saying making sure we have clean drinking water. I don't think the idea was to supplant current dollars out there, but I don't think anyone thinks that our public health infrastructure is well-funded. So the question is, how can whatever additional dollars are out there in the community can be focused in a way to actually help that along? Not necessarily replace public money, but help it. So I think it would remain up into rule, and I think there's certainly a lot of room there. So,
excuse me,
follow up. Please go ahead, yes.
So then you would include things like storing vaccines or educational materials, that kind of. It's a very broad range in your mind. Okay.
It's very
the public health boss?
Well, maybe there is a definition. That's a good question.
I don't believe there's one in statute right now.
Yes, go ahead.
Either one of you can answer this, and I think I already know the answer, but just to get it on the record, is there any thought given to how these funds would be distributed throughout the state? The hospitals certainly aren't evenly distributed throughout the state. Are you looking at, like, these would be state programs or grants to localities, or is there any vision of how the money might flow?
Mr. Chair and Mr. Co-Chair,
Dr. Cohen gets to keep it all.
Well, the bill is silent on that, as is the amendment. I think in my head it was always about local hospitals and hospital systems, and granted that some of them are statewide, but local hospitals working with local public health, not about necessarily spending dollars to the state public health department, but working local hospitals, local public health. I mean, that was my idea, although it is silent in the bill.
Representative Doherty?
Yes, I just need a definition in the dash, I guess, 3 amendment. It talks about an acute care. Is this hospital, is that basically are all hospitals acute
There's
care?
Dash 3.
It says that 10% of funds of an acute care hospital in
Not
the state.
Not all hospitals are acute care.
Pardon?
Not all hospitals are acute care.
Okay.
The Oregon State Hospital, for example, is not an acute care hospital.
Most of your general, your general hospital.
Think
your
of that.
Okay, yeah. Most of the things we think of hospitals are acute care. Thank you.
In urban areas.
Somebody else? No?
I was just saying in urban areas, what we think about in hospitals in urban areas and rural areas who have more of the critical access hospitals.
It used to be the differentiating things like tuberculosis hospitals and other kinds of special hospitals as opposed to acute general or something. Dr. Cohen, go for it.
Representative Greenlick, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Dr. Mel Cohn. I'm the director of the Public Health Division at the Oregon Health Authority, and I'm here to testify about this bill. I want to first thank you for giving this bill a hearing and thank Representative Kotek for raising this issue, because I do think that as we go forward with health reform, how we build this link, particularly at the local level between local health departments and hospitals, is really very, very critical. You know, public health in many ways is in the prevention business, and if we're serious about bending the cost curve when it comes to health care, we're going to have to do a better job than we're all doing now in terms of prevention and preventing people from needing health care in the first place. I know you will hear from other speakers about the documented needs at the local level. There is a fair amount out there with respect to Representative Kenemer's question about what constitutes the public health system, public health infrastructure. Clearly, if this bill were to go forward and the language were to be in an open form the way it is now, we would have to spend some time in a very collaborative way, I think, figuring out exactly what that means and nailing that down in rule. So I think this is a critical issue, and it's an important one for everybody to be discussing, and appreciate the opportunity to raise it for you today.
It should be disgusting.
Okay.
Mel, thank you very much.
Thank you.
As always. Can we have Ellen Lowe and Andy Davidson? Always a pleasure to hear from both of them. There she is.
She's right here.
Yeah. She was hiding behind Andy as usual.
Easy to do.
Actually, Andy usually hides behind her. That's the. This is about as against the bill as we're going to get, which I sense isn't all that against.
Co-chair Representative Greenlick, co-chair Representative Thompson, vice chairs and members of the House Health Committee. I'm Ellen Lowe, and I'm the community advocate for the Oregon Association of Hospitals and Health Systems and the patients we serve. And I appear today on their behalf in opposition to House Bill 2392. While we respect the intent of the sponsor to provide sustainability, stability, a lifeline for Oregon's public health systems, we do not believe House Bill 2392 meets its intent. Representative Kotek said this isn't to replace funds, but to help it. There are hardly any funds in public health by the state of Oregon to replace. We acknowledge that this historic underfunded by our state and many counties for essential population health functions is a barrier to achieving the Population Health Foundation of the triple aim of Oregon's current health transformation effort. But this proposed legislation will not deliver clarity or stability to the funding needs. And with this proposed carve-out for public health infrastructure from community benefits, it may well challenge the findings of the community assessment conducted by the hospital. Those community findings of need may not meet the 10% required by House Bill 2392. This bill appears to be based on the assumption that the value of each hospital's community benefits is in the form of hard dollars that can be arbitrarily divided. It can't be. For example, charity care, loan staff, donated equipment, space for educational offerings, and community gardens and community outreach have significant value, values you may not wish to reduce by 10%. You aren't the only ones raising questions about the definition of public health infrastructure. Is it limited to direct contributions, or would it include a successful recent collaboration as Oregon responded to the swine flu? Oregon hospitals were primary participants during the scare. Protocols were initiated by each hospital. There was a statewide coordination team led by Dr. Mel Cohn, and the team was on call 24/7. One of the leaders was the Director of Quality and Clinical Services for the hospitals, Diane Waldo. This type of individual and system response may not appear on a community benefit report, but I report it as one of the many examples of the partnership demonstrated by our member hospitals and their association with population health. Those partnerships may be invisible to the wider community, but they aren't to the clinics and the not-for-profit agencies serving Oregon's low-income and unorganized populations with direct health and wraparound services. I have provided for you a brief summary of the community benefit reporting programs, a glossary, and that is where you may view the real technical nature of definitions, which becomes part of community benefit reporting. An announcement of pending federal review, because this is also part of our new health reform at the federal level. And a link to the October 2010 interim report. And in addition, a copy of the community benefit, one of the community benefits reports from Peace Health in Eugene. Now, the first official report, as Representative Kotek reported, will be issued shortly by the Oregon Health Policy and Research Office, or OOPR. And I wish it were available to share with you today. But it isn't easy to be first. This program was actually initiated by the Hospital Board of Trustees through sponsorship of that bill in the 2007 session. The board believed, and by the way, it's the first time in the memory of people associated with the Hospital Association that they ever initiated a bill. It's often playing defense, but this time they really wanted to be out front. The board believed that it would serve statewide interest as well as local to have a uniform public reporting of the community benefits that were being provided. They welcomed a transparent process as an improved way of connecting with community needs. They believed that as community hospitals, their incidence of charity care should be known. But as the first state to establish a uniform reporting system, it's taken the skilled patients, led by OOPR, with all our hospitals, in a collaborative public process to develop reporting definitions that accomplish the transparency goal. Hospitals asked their identified communities and healthcare partners about needs. Then they developed responses, and with UPER's guidance, we will soon have their many accomplishments documented. And now on a personal note, in 2007, I was then an independent contractor, just as I am now, when I was approached by the Hospital Association to add the Community Benefit Initiative to my portfolio. I consulted with my other clients and with their approval accepted the offer, for I saw it as an opportunity to link community hospitals with other community-based groups to promote health. As we approach the formation of coordinated care organizations, the importance of community assessments of need and responsive complementary networks have even greater potential to guide us in our quest for local accountability and local responsibility. Let's not limit their opportunity to act upon what they have heard from their community. And now I'd like to turn to Andy Davidson, the Hospital Association CEO, who will share news about a most beneficial listening and action collaborative that includes the districts of most of you.
Mr. Davidson.
Co-chairs Greenlick, Thompson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Andy Davidson. I'm the president and CEO of the Oregon Association of Hospitals. As most of you know, we represent all 58 acute care hospitals in the state, along with our state's community health systems. Pleasure to be before you today, and I'm actually here at the request of the bill's sponsor, as I committed to her last week when we met on this bill, to come and talk about something positive. Not just to say, no, that's the job for Dr. No here, but to actually share with all of you something that is going on in the Tri-County region, because as I look across the dais, I see that it really touches on almost every one of you. And the story is as follows. CCOs are clearly going to drive, when they pass, a change behavior pattern. Because suddenly for all providers, not just hospitals, but for physicians and others, the health of your public becomes in your enlightened self-interest. If you're taking a capitated payment, you are there to keep people healthy, and you've got to design a payment system that reflects that. But in advance of all of that, and in the absence of any CCO legislation or other transformation legislation, every hospital and health system in the Tri-County region came together a couple of months ago for a first meeting with the public health directors from Washington, Multnomah, and Clackamas County. And our purpose was to explore the level of interest across hospitals and public health in pursuing a single community needs assessment across the Tri-County region. So think of it as, let's first measure the what before we get to the how. And from that first meeting, we've now had a second meeting that took place last Monday, unanimous approval to move forward, and in fact to invite Clark County into that mix, because the river is really nothing more than a body of water that separates a population, but improving that population's health is in the interest of Multnomah, Clackamas, and Washington County as much as it is in Clark County. So our voluntary effort that took place sans this bill or the introduction of this bill is now underway, and I look forward to keeping you all informed as we progress down that path. In our own strategic plan at the association, I thought I would share with the committee, Mr. Chair, that we have the task of repeating this process in other communities across the state. And the goal set out by our board was to create single community needs assessment activities in at least three communities this year. So we started with the hardest. And we intend to progress. We think that Medford's going to be next to have that conversation, and where we go from there is sort of going to be based on initial interest. But it's exactly the right thing to do. And again, I would just put it in the context of the order of battle. Let's first understand what it is the community needs. That will come from two perspectives. The first is this work that we're doing in the Tri-County region, and the second is this report that's going to be released. So let's first understand where the needs are, and then let's figure out how it is that we get there. And so with that, I would take questions, please.
I guess I'd like to ask a question. I spent about 25 years as the community benefits director of a fairly large hospital in the metropolitan area. And it's not too credible that the problem is that these would be indirect things rather than direct things. I mean, for example, I think your work on the H1N1 would clearly be fall under this piece of community benefit. And your work to coordinate the health assessments of the community would clearly fall under this. I mean, it's not that we can't get things, we can't figure out what things public health are. And it also is clear this doesn't require hospitals to spend any more money than they're spending now. It's a piece of the distribution. I'm having trouble, I really am, understanding why you would care, except you don't want somebody to tell you to do something that you hadn't yet thought of doing, or maybe you even have thought of doing, because certainly the work you're talking about is related to the public health infrastructure, with no question. But what's the really problem?
Alan, you want me to respond?
Yeah,
put him on the hook. Co-Chair Greenlick, members of the committee, I put that in the context of the story of the slippery slope. So today it's public health. Who is it tomorrow? Should they come before you and make a case? Now, they may want to capture some portion. You know, as Ellen mentioned, we have a really poor track record in this state of supporting public health financially on the behalf of the state. It's terrible. I mean, you know Representative Greenlick better than anybody. And, it is the story of the slippery slope. But first, let's understand the problem and see if there is a problem. And if there is, then let's figure out how best to address it. But this is a classic case of putting the cart before the horse. And I would just say I really appreciate Representative Kotek's intent in generating dialogue about this. She talked about potential dialogue in the interim. And if we were going to do that, I think we should use the community benefits report as well as what we determine in this process that we're undertaking in the Tri-County region where the bulk of our population obviously is located. And I'm sorry that Representative Hoyle isn't here either, because she has some very interesting stories from her day job about this very thing and how both hospitals have come together in the Eugene area to do exactly this. And so, I think that would be helpful to get her feedback and to have her engaged in any of that conversation.
Great. Mr. Chair, may I just comment that Please. In listening to all the dialogue since really the Oregon Health Fund Board days and then now with the new commission and your work in the transformation where we address the triple aim. And we really talk about population health as being one of the really critical areas. And so in my judgment, as I look at this, I see what we're doing is separating public health, population health, whatever term you want to use, from really that holistic health reform transformation that we're supposed to be achieving. And so I you talk about your history in community assessment. I go back to, and it may be of when Representative Thompson first heard of me, when I chaired a regional planning committee in the Mid-Valley back in the late 60s and early 70s, and how important it is to go out and listen and not place barriers to what people have an opportunity to respond to. And so again, I see this separating something from what I would hope would be a very holistic transformation effort that I could celebrate before I quit talking to people like you.
Yeah, but I think you intended to set me up on this, and I do. I can't help but commenting on it. As a part of the transformation process, I've been talking about the triple A mumbo jumbo, and it's because I don't believe generally that what medical care organizations do relate, except at the margin, to health. This is a perfect example of where
I see the possibility of stepping out beyond the intervention of the disease process, which has to do with the second and third of the triple aim, but not a whole lot necessarily to deal with the health. This would be a perfect example where I would accept the notion that hospitals and other healthcare situations could get into the triple aim question, looking at the health of the population exactly the way Andy proposed doing so. I mean, this would make real, it seems to me, this kind of stuff, the notion of the triple aim, whereas being the best disease fighters in town is not bad, particularly when you have disease, but it doesn't really get to the health very much. But thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, and one more panel on this one. We have Morgan Colling, Mary Lou Henrich, and David Rabinow. Some of my favorite people. Oh, so is Andy and Ellen. And Tina, and Tina and Mel.
Just all your favorite people came.
All my favorite people today.
Should I start?
Please.
Good afternoon, co-chairs Thompson, Greenlick, members of the committee. Thanks for the opportunity to testify today. My name is Morgan Cowling, and I'm the executive director of the Oregon Coalition of Local Health Officials, also known as CLO. CLO represents the collective interests of the 34 local health departments in Oregon that are actively working to deliver services, monitor the health of our communities, protect residents and visitors from environmental and infectious diseases and health hazards. And I am here today to support House Bill 2392. And first, I'd like to thank Representative Kotek for bringing this. This has been an amazing conversation so far to hear and to have the opportunity to talk about the important pieces that are needed to protect the population's health. Our public health system is suffering from many of the fiscal constraints that are plaguing all of our important health and human services programs, budget cuts. The local public health system is primarily funded with federal funding streams, and then state and local county funds help supplement based on the needs of our local communities. Currently, all of these funding streams are vulnerable right now. Public health is an important ingredient for our health system. We ensure that people don't get sick, that we keep people healthy, not just get it back when they see a doctor. We do through this through community-based tobacco prevention, restaurant inspections, and ensuring clean water. Public health works with the community to help identify the gaps within the health system and then try to meet the needs, such as programs like school-based health centers. As the House Healthcare Committee has recently heard, obesity-related chronic diseases such as diabetes are drivers of healthcare costs. However, local public health doesn't have the fund to address community-based chronic disease prevention programs that address healthy eating and active living on a system-wide level. We know that community prevention works based on our work with the tobacco prevention. There is clearly no shortage of public health work to address the population's health. For all of these reasons, it is important that we begin and continue to have these conversations about what local public health and local partners have identified as the community needs and how we collectively should pay for that work. The conversations need to include you, the legislature, advocates, and then the local conversations that are happening between the public health systems and the area hospitals. It is important that as we approach this, it is important that we approach this as the local work to improve the public's health, not necessarily as checks written to the health departments. I do have to say that there are communities where local public health officials and hospitals are beginning to work together in a more strategic and systematic way. The example that was given in the metro region is a really good example of what can happen, and we are encouraged that this work is beginning. Now is the time that we want to talk about local public health infrastructure is and should be providing and how that relates to the healthcare system. We know that healthy people require fewer expensive healthcare services. Hopefully this hearing will help begin this conversation. CLO stands ready to work with the legislature and the health systems to address the public health, the work, and all of our roles within that work. Thank you.
Thank you very much. CLO, we all admire the work CLO does. Happy to have you here. Who's next?
Good afternoon.
co-chairs Greenlick, Thompson, members of the committee. For the record, my name is David Rebenall, and I'm a senior program officer with Northwest Health Foundation. I did submit a written testimony, so I'm just going to highlight a few and let you guys take the time to read them when you can. But I'm here today on behalf of the foundation to voice our support for sustaining Oregon's public health infrastructure. We recognize that community benefit programs of many hospitals are committed to addressing real needs in the communities they serve. And we want to get on the record to say the Northwest Health Foundation is ready to provide technical assistance and support to hospitals and others in their efforts to advance public health. Northwest Health Foundation is a not-for-profit, philanthropic organization that works to improve the health of the people of Oregon. We support community organizations with grant-making and other activities, including advocating for policies that make it easier for everyone to be healthy. Northwest Health Foundation studies, supports, and advocates for public health infrastructure every day. Probably the most efficient way we achieve good health for everyone and reduce health disparities is by funding our state and local public health systems. Our public health system is truly part of the important infrastructure that allows us all to thrive. It's an integral component of the ladder of opportunity that exists for all of us. We know that health begins long before illness in our schools, our jobs, in our day-to-day lives. It takes a lot of work to create a non-event, and our public health system creates non-events every day. Every day, babies are not getting measles, families are not getting sick from contaminated water, teens are finding it increasingly difficult to take up smoking, E. coli is not spreading through our communities, and when outbreaks do pop up, they're contained. We can reasonably count on any restaurant we dine out to be safe. You get the idea. I just wanted to thank members of this committee and Representative Tina Kotek for allowing us to begin having this important conversation. We understand that the issue before you regarding our community's health is at some level a budget discussion, and that the difficulty of these conversations is exacerbated by our inability to address the evolving needs in our community that then drive up health care costs. We, too, recognize that public health is not sufficiently organized to be effective, and that is, it is sometimes structured with 20th century systems, and to no surprise, may not have all the systems in place to meet our 21st century needs. Northwest Health Foundation is aware that health care reform presents an opportunity to modernize our public health system, including the way we finance and pay for these services. Public health continues to be underinvested, and Northwest Health Foundation is committed to exploring funding of a sustainable public health system, and we will commit ourselves to working with hospitals and other funders to engage in effective strategies to support our public health infrastructure. Thank you.
David, thank you.
Co-Chair Greenlick and Co-Chair Thompson in your absence, and committee members, my name is Mary Lou Henrich, and I am the Executive Director of the Oregon Public Health Institute, an independent, nonprofit, non-governmental organization with a mission also to improve the health of Oregonians through support of effective public health policy and programs. As David said, knowing that health begins long before illness, in our homes, schools, workplaces, and communities, we work with many groups, individuals, and organizations who collectively make up Oregon's public health system, bringing our collective skills, talents, and resources to bear in ways that make our daily habitats supportive of health, making it possible for Oregonians to make the healthy choice the easy choice. As many of you know, I have spent my entire adult life working as a nurse and administrator in the health field, specifically focusing on public health for more than 40 years. Many of these years were at Multnomah County Health Department in varied staff and then senior management roles, then the founding CEO of Care Oregon from the start of the Oregon Health Plan in 1994 through 2003, now at the Oregon Public Health Institute since mid-2003. OPHI, just a little quick history, but began as an organization called Friends of Public Health in 1999, and actually Co-Chair Greenlick served on the board of directors for several years before I joined the organization. When I came in 2003, Friends had morphed into Community Health Partnership and had just adopted its first strategic focus to prevent childhood obesity, along with continuing its initial intent to support state and local public health from a non-governmental organization that would serve as a community partner and advocate for essential functions of public health from outside government.
In 2005, Community Health Partnership was urged by many public health and health stakeholders in Oregon to evolve into a public health institute, and we became Community Health Partnership, Oregon's Public Health Institute. I remember well the board retreat that year when they told me I had just joined a couple years before, but they said, one of your main charges, Mary Lou, is to speak truth to power. Well, here I am today trying to do that. Nearly 3 years ago, we partnered with the Coalition of Local Health Officials, before Morgan took over as the executive director, to facilitate a statewide analysis of local health departments' capacity to fulfill their core essential functions as identified by the CDC and the Institute of Medicine. These 10 essential functions are the underpinning, and I'm quoting now from CDC, for a fully functioning public health system. A system that identifies local health issues, mobilizes communities to do something about them, determines best practices and policies, and implements and evaluates interventions for their success. So I won't list all of the essential functions today, the 10 of them, but will remind the committee of that they are in this document, which all of you should have, and if you need another copy, we can definitely supply it. But they are to monitor health status, to identify community health problems, to mobilize community partnerships to identify and solve these health problems, to develop policies and plans that support individual and community health efforts, to evaluate effectiveness, accessibility, and quality of personal and population-based services, and to research for new insights and innovative solutions to health problems.
Mary Lou, can
yes.
you move in a little?
Can I go quickly?
You can go quickly, or you can skip the next four paragraphs and get to the point.
All right. The point is that these local health departments are underfunded and not sustainable, and they aren't able to fulfill those five and the other five essential services. And the report showed that they're about 50% of capacity for these essential services. So do I say that House Bill 2392 is the answer to this terrible funding, lack of funding that public health infrastructure has? Absolutely not. But I do believe that, as has been said earlier today, that it begins the discussion and the dialogue about how are we collectively going to really improve the population health. And I, too, applaud the work of the local health departments and the hospital and health systems that are coming together in that four-county region. It is very exciting, and that is the kind of thing that we need more of and we need to sustain. So what I ask again, and after thanking Representative Kotek for bringing this forward, is that knowing this isn't going to move forward at this point, that we really do remember that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. That's about 6.25% is an ounce. An ounce is to a pound. And nowhere are we spending 6.25% of any amount of money from anywhere on population health and prevention. And it is going to be difficult to figure out, when everyone says we don't need more money to be put into the health system because it's there, that we're spending money on things that don't need to be spent on. But the fact is, the people who have that money, it is very difficult to figure out how to wrestle it out and to move it forward into the population and prevention pieces of the system that are totally underfunded. So we stand ready to be part of that discussion with you. We hope that you will take that leadership along with the fund board and others that are in this room, Hospital Association, CLO, et cetera, to have this discussion and move it forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you very much for coming. I just like to comment that this is a very weak way to try and deal with a very bad problem that you raise. And the real issue is in this building.
Yes.
I mean, we have been so underfunding the public health yes. system with general funds for...
Absolutely.
Well, forever. I mean, yes. 10 years ago, there was zero
right.
general funds in the public health system. There isn't a hell of a lot more mm-hmm. right now.
About a dollar a person over the biennium.
Well, that's not too bad.
$1.
Yeah, we have a letter from the Legacy Health System. Do you notice whether it's for or opposed?
It's kind of neutral. It just lays out some data and statistics.
Okay. They've made the news with their work on disease prevention. That's been important. I'll close this public hearing. It will not go away, Representative. It's something that will be there and we'll keep working on. I will open a work session on the one that says move. There it is.
House Bill 2013. Madam Minister, will you tell us where we are?
We are, Mr. Chair. I'd love to. House Bill 2013, you'll recall we had a public hearing just a week ago on this. This is the bill that is creating the board of body art practitioners. This is addressing the upcoming practices of scarification and implantations and where and how it fits within our other regulatory processes. The bill abolishes the current advisory council for electrologists and permanent color technicians and tattoo artists and transfers all those duties into the new Board of Body Art. Mr. Chair, we do have the revenue and fiscal on the bill in its current form, and there's minimal expenditure from fiscal and a no revenue impact on this bill, Mr. Chair.
And it doesn't need any amendments?
Nobody has mentioned to me or anybody else, I believe, so.
We have a motion?
Just a Ducat.
Sorry.
We're writing it as we go here, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2013 to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Period. Representative Thompson moves House Bill 2013 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Any discussion?
That's how we got there. What? That's how we got there.
Will you please call the roll, sir?
Yes.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative Boyle.
Aye.
Representative
Whitehead.
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair
Cannon. Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Cannon.
Aye.
Co-Chair Thompson.
Aye.
Co-Chair
Greenland. Aye. Motion passes. Now, this would be a fun one to take to the floor, I'm sure. We'll get lots of visual aids to help.
I will carry it. If the speaker will allow me to use visual aids.
You got it.
Yeah.
And well, you can arrange for her to have.
Were those personal?
The great assortment of visual aids.
No.
Perhaps.
So Darty's a carrier.
I didn't get my ears pierced until I was like 35, so.
Perhaps we can get Representative Darty and Representative Hoyle to show their piercings on the floor. You think that might be a good idea?
I know. I think that would not be a good idea.
Okay.
I closed the work session on 2013.
That might be objection. Okay, enough of that.
Open a work session on 2380 for the purpose of adopting the amendment, in which place we'll get our fiscal and revenue and can move it. And then we will carry it over until Wednesday and move it.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2380, we had a public hearing on it on February 14th. This, in the original form, required the direct entry midwives to be licensed by the Oregon Health Licensing Agency by January 1, 2016. We do have a dash two amendment that was presented to the committee, which is deleting the mandatory licensing requirement. It provides for confidentiality of the information disclosed during a peer review. It decreases the board of direct entry midwife membership from 8 to 7 and reduces the current requirements that 2 members be a certified nurse midwife to 1. It still maintains the emergency clause effective on passage, and I think that covers all of it, Mr. Chair.
A motion?
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the dash two amendments to House Bill 2380, dated 3/24/11.
Representative Thompson moves that we adopt the dash two amendments, is that?
Yes, sir.
Dash two.
The dash two amendments to House Bill 2380. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? The dash two amendments are adopted. We will hold this over until Wednesday the 13th, and we will close the work session on House Bill 2380. We've done everything we need to do. We've carried over what needs to be carried over.
I believe you have, Mr. Chair. Do you want to announce that we might be staying late next week?
Is it?
Said an all-time record.
Yes. Let me announce something even beyond that. We might need to stay over next Monday and next Wednesday will be our last days that we can work House bills. So we have authorization to stay over till 6. in addition to that, I was thinking, Jim and I haven't had a chance to talk, but I'm sure you won't have any problem, that having the House bills done on Wednesday and Thursday being the last day, we ought to take a day off on Friday, huh?
That sounds wonderful.
I'm going to argue strenuously against it, but you can win if you argue hard.
Aye.
Is that up for vote,
so
Mr.
Let's,
Chair?
No, it's not. Let's plan on canceling. You can issue a new agenda. We don't have any business we need to have on that day.
The only thing we had in draft, Mr. Chair, was a request to do an informational with a fellow representative, but we had not confirmed that date.
Okay.
But we'll work on it.
Let's move to the day.
That's right.
It's a hard-working committee. It needs to get Friday afternoon off.
Okay.
So you're talking this Friday?
No.
We're
Friday. Next Monday and next Wednesday, we need to be prepared to stay till 6.
Got it.
We might not need it, but we need to be prepared to do that. And then the Friday, that will be the 21st. Friday the 21st.
Pardon me, 22nd.
Thursday's the 21st. Friday the 22nd. We will not be meeting. And I worked very fast because Representative Doherty asked me to.
I appreciate this. Thank you.
We're adjourned.
Just for me?
Wow. Just for you?
Thank you.